Take a network break, get a virtual donut and a bare metal coffee, and hang out for our weekly analysis of tech news. I'm Drew Conry Murray, and with me is Greg Farrow. Today's show is being sponsored by ExtraHop, the leader in real-time IT analytics and the pioneer of wired data, the ultimate lens into digital transactions. The ExtraHop platform provides insight across the IT environment, helping IT leaders make data-driven decisions to optimize performance, security, and customer experience. And if you tweet at ExtraHop and mention Packet Pusher, you can get a free t-shirt. And to learn more about ExtraHop and try it for yourself, visit extrahop.com/demo. To the news. Cisco Systems essentially DDoSed the tech media last week by releasing a flood of product announcements and new strategic initiatives all ahead of Cisco Live. In a single day, the company essentially decided to launch itself into intent-based intuitive networking. They announced a new line of Catalyst switches. There's a new analytics platform, new capabilities to spot malware and encrypted traffic. We have so much to break down. We're going to try to spend a little extra time here and just dig into Cisco news.
So first of all, Drew, they didn't announce it during Cisco Live.
They did not. Like, I was like, what is this?
Have you noticed that? Like, it's not notice. Just the Cisco intuitive networking thing is the big announcement. And normally they would save that to get up on stage and talk about it. And we would have no chance to cover it. And no one would know. And, you know, on and so on and so forth. They have actually announced it ahead of the conference so that it can actually get ahead of the – like it, when everybody's at Cisco Live, and they've been obviously been listening to what we say. That's obviously it, right?
Clearly,
they're plugged right into what we asked for, and they're giving it to us. So there is that. And just to have another sort of gentle fun, they actually got on to CNBC because they hired the company that designs Ferrari cars or something like that, a company called Pininfarina, which is a design company. And they got on to CNBC, of all things, to talk about their new switches because they were designed by the same people that do Ferrari. And I was like, oh, what? What? So I thought, yeah, now that's exactly the message that customers want to hear, that the levers on your switch have been designed by the same design team that designed Ferrari cars.
It's kind of funny because we always talk about, you know, when you're spending money on equipment, does it really matter if you're buying a Ferrari or a Toyota? And here it is. I guess it does.
We do joke, but this is hugely excited. I am very excited about this announcement. I think there's so much about this. I've wasted so much time digging into this and thinking about it, and just far more than I should just to record a podcast, to be honest with you. Hugely acceptable. I think the first thing to notice is let's focus on the business side, and then we'll try and dive into each of the technologies. There's two sections that I really want to poke into. Now, first thing here is that Chuck Robbins led the announcement. So that right off the bat tells you that because Chuck's on stage talking about the thing, they held an event somewhere where people came in to talk about it. That tells you that it's a big deal. The CEO doesn't normally stand up and talk about everything that happens inside the company. His time is reserved for things that are important. When I asked around a few people, there's sort of these rumors floating around the valley that Chuck Robbins has sort of said, this is my personal legacy. This is me making a big change inside of Cisco. Yeah, so pay attention, because if the CEO, and that, you know, I have nothing but rumors to say that's true. If the CEO is making it a big deal, then it's a big deal.
That's right. I mean, the CEO is usually the one who gets up on stage at an event like Cisco Live. I was thinking at HP Discover, it was Meg Whitman who came out. That's when you bring the CEO out to talk about the whole strategy and all that stuff. So yes, to have the CEO come out outside of a major event like that, get up on stage and tie his or her name to some kind of new initiative. Yes, that should signal.
Yeah, well, usually, so John Chambers for the last 10 years has actually spent most of his time in a spreadsheet, right? And he really got away from the technology. And every time he got up on the thing, he just spouted out some marketing words and went on with some business stuff. And it really wasn't a very interesting discussion for the last 5 years because he had nothing really new or interesting to say. So to see Chuck talk about this, unfortunately, I haven't been able to find a YouTube of it. I would have thought there'd be one, but hopefully there's one by now. If there's not, if you know, please email it to me. I'd love to watch the announcement as a streamed video and see the rest of it. Right. So first of all, this is basically SDN for the campus and network. What they've basically brought out is an SDN system for the entire physical wired campus. So they call it part of their digital network architecture. And the announcement is about managing the end-to-end network from the campus, branch, and WAN. That's the strategy. What Cisco's saying there is they want to produce an SDN controller, which is going to manage not just the campus, but the branch LAN and the WAN in between it, right? Did you get that out of it?
You know, frankly, there are so many moving parts and pieces here, I wasn't sure what to make of it. But given some of the things I've been looking at in terms of what they're calling software-defined access, which sounds like a merger of wired and wireless, and having policy that can follow you based on your device or identity, that seems like a good read to me. This is about getting that whole picture view and whole management capability of your entire network, yes.
Yeah. So definitely in the part where it talks about the DNA center, the digital network center, it says quite clearly this is about the campus, the branch, and the WAN. So they're going to try and bring all of that access technology. And now, just to be clear here, what that means is obviously from a financial point of view, Cisco's the vast majority of Cisco's revenue comes from selling campus switches and WAN routers to the enterprise. I mean, obviously service provider and there's all this thing, but in the enterprise revenue, it comes from that. And its services revenue, its recurring revenue stream comes out. So they absolutely have to own this before White Box comes in and spoils all that fun, or some startup comes in with a controller and does a Viptela, right? So that's the motivation is. But the announcement is only about the campus itself. So they're not turning on features in the branch, and they're saying sometime in the future we'll soon have the brochure sort of hint to the fact that there's branches in WAN. And the way they're going to do that is going to combine automation with analytics and security tools that will lead into like a cloud-like operation. So that is, you know, click the button and something automatically is provisioned in your campus network, right? And it's also, because it's going to do that automation, you're now going to be able to do campus virtualization. So instead of fiddling around with BGP MPLS or the Lisp in the campus fabric or BGP VPN and CLIing your soul away to some arcane god of pointless configuration, you're going to be able to have this platform that sits over the top. Now, don't take that as an endorsement. Take that as that's the vision that they're trying to lay out. The way they're going to do that is it's going to have these intuitive workflows, which makes it, and I quote, easy to design, provision, and apply policy across your network. So literally intuitive workflows is, you know, we've talked a lot about intent-based networking and how you can take this is what I'm going to do and break it down into this is what the policy is. So I need to get some policy decision. So I've got a database of policies and then further break it down using software to say this is how I'm going to configure the device. That's a very rough summary of intent-based networking.
It's essentially saying, I want this outcome to happen. I've built some models, and now it's up to the infrastructure to go figure out how to make that outcome happen on my behalf.
Yeah, that's right. So you trickle down through, the software has layers, and you say, I want the VLAN on that port, then I want to put that port into the VLAN. Oh, the VLAN's not there. Well, I'll have to create a VLAN. Oh, if I'm creating a VLAN, I'll need to do some spanning tree configurations and some trunking and some blah, blah. And so all that stuff just happens automatically.
All the gory details are supposed to be hidden from you, essentially. After you've built out some models that tell the system how to do it, then it goes and does it. But you've got to think up all the dependencies and so on and build that into the model. But yes, it's essentially streamlining provisioning and access and deployment.
Yeah. And so that's automation at one part is the, you know, software goes and does that and is able to read the configurations and do it. And the other half is a policy engine. The question is, how do you inform the policy engine? Because most of the intent that we've done so far has been people writing scripts and they're fairly static. What you want to be able to do is to say, I'm only going to do this if I have some sort of insights about how the network is operating. I mean, is this trunk overloaded? Is this switch running too hard? If I put this here, is something, you know, will that cause packet loss or packet latency across that particular service? So they've built in a machine learning engine. There's a software controller called DNA Center, which is, anyway, whatever. And the machine learning can suck up data from all of the switches in your campus or in the access layer and start to drill up automated insights. So again, we're starting to see the arrival of machine learning and network and bubbling up, usually what I would imagine to be fairly obvious. So as somebody who monitors the network, instead of spending 4 hours of your day looking through the charts and everything, it's going to go. And then what they're doing is starting to lead, those insights then lead into an assurance. So all the criticisms of the network, no visibility, we don't know what's happening, there's no tools to know, we don't find out when something's broken until people ring up the phone. All those criticisms that we all have about our network, and I've been very critical about, this has the possibility of solving all of that because I can have some assurance that there's nothing going wrong in the network because I'm actually seeing all of it at a level where I'm getting NetFlow data coming off all of these switches and feeding it into a system and saying things like, oh, there's a latency issue going on at this part of my campus or there's packet loss happening over here on this here. Or, you know, the switch is not doing what it's supposed to do. And that should all be visible to us for the first time in ever, basically.
Yes, yes.
And it should all be very cloud-like too. So in the sense that you should be able to have this system, it sits over the top. And if something's going wrong, you don't necessarily have to have these uber-trained operational people to do the first layer of the diagnostics. So it doesn't need to be, you know, this months and months of work and all that sort of stuff to get it going. So it should be fairly straightforward.
Looking at some of the data sheets and some of the videos that Cisco has around all of this, and we'll have links to where you can find all this, it reminds me a little bit, I guess, of Meraki and their whole approach of a very simple, very graphical interface that has a global picture of all of your assets out there and lets you apply policies and enforce them from one place. It seems like that's what Cisco's trying to do for its own portfolio now.
Well, yes and no. I guess we're sort of seeing things evolve over time. So, look, they didn't have much success in the data center with ACI. That's not to say it's been a miserable failure. Don't overdo. But it didn't stop startups from existing in the data center. It didn't give Cisco total control. It didn't displace EMC. You know, ACI was partly meant to stop Arista and to prevent EMC from creeping in and make sure VMware's NSX product didn't, you know, beat them in the market. And, you know, that really hasn't happened. While ACI is a modest success in its own right, it hasn't met the targets, which I think is that Cisco needed to come up with an SDN killer.
Right. It hasn't killed the big switch. It hasn't killed the Cumulus, and it certainly hasn't killed Arista or NSX.
Yeah, that's right. And IWAN didn't have a good reception in the
in the SD-WAN space, no.
In the SD-WAN space, yeah. So maybe third time's a charm. So now that they've bought Viptela, they've got that, you know, that'll take some time to come out. So maybe third time is a charm. Now, to support all of this features, Cisco brought out its new campus switch strategy. This is a new series, a whole new family of switches, just in case there wasn't enough of them. We've got a whole other family. So there's a family called the Catalyst 9000, all targeting the campus. But really, the switches aren't the big story. To me, they look pretty much meh. Whatever that they're all based around the UADB2 chipset. Well, we'll talk more about those in a minute. So really, it's about taking complex network architectures in the campus and then getting them all together under one SDN controller type architecture. It's called software-defined access all the way across the marketing material. It's got these little fingerprints about it. Automated networks are complicated. So as somebody who's, I've been talking to people who do automation at scale, and they get into really difficult problems around, you know, if the vendor changes something or the CLI changes or the vendor API changes or the software the vendor using. So in theory, this should work better because in theory, Cisco should be presenting a unified product. And this gets to the heart of where Cisco has let us down fairly consistently for some time in that their software quality is often poor. So here's hoping that they've got the software quality this time around because scaling automation is really, really difficult. Expressing policy is hard and creating policy automation from intent is really, really very difficult. We know that because, you know, we've talked and done shows with people like Glue Networks and Apstra and Anuda, and those people will, you know, happily tell you just how tough it is to get this stuff working reliably.
That's right, because there are so many dependencies, so many systems you need to interface with, and if you do change one API somewhere, it could bring the whole system crashing down. So software is essential if you're going to pull off something like this.
That's right. And so I think the introduction of the new switches, we don't know a lot about what operating, I wasn't able to find too much information about the switches and the operating system, whether it's a ground up rewrite. There was a couple of people popped up on Twitter and said, no, it's totally new. It's all fantastic, which it should theoretically be great because, you know, the legacy software that they've got from Cisco customers generally telling us they're not very happy with the legacy iOS stuff across the board, so they need to do something there. Maybe a new start around that could be good for business, could be really good for customers. So let's be hopeful, right? Let's take this. So this idea of the thing that it should be all end-to-ended could give us a way to see SDN really come into the campus. Now, I've said several times that SDN needs to come into the campus, probably more than the data center. And so this is what makes me excited because the campus and the obviously SD-WAN, this is exactly what we saw for software-defined WAN, this idea of controllers and visibility and flow data and records and GUIs and making us know what's happening. This is what, it's just like SD-WAN, what SD-WAN did for the WAN, this is what doing for the access layer, which I think is just well overdue.
I mean, as a vision, it's fantastic because this is exactly what you want. You want this kind of visibility. You want automation at scale. So if they can pull it off, if they can unify wired and wireless, provide policy and access control in an automated fashion and essentially build a campus fabric that really works like a fabric, that's great.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it really should simplify the ownership of these systems. So that would be great. Just to make sure that you're not too confused about this, there is more. Cisco's also basically announcing that the security tools will be integrated with this platform. They didn't actually say that. What they introduced was a new tool that does encrypted threat analysis. And what that means is normally what a lot of malware and viruses are doing is they're starting to encrypt their payloads in TLS packets. And so because of that, they're encrypted, so they're very difficult to inspect. And a lot of companies just can't inspect them. And if you're putting proxy servers, and once you're inside the campus network, once a piece of malware is running, it's very challenging to create lateral protection. So as people move sideways across the campus, you can't see or do this. In university campuses and things like that, maybe you can do a couple of segments with an MPLS backbone, or maybe you're doing some MPLS Lite with some handling a half a dozen VERFs or something. This takes it a step further and starts to use features inside the switches. Obviously, this is a very sticky thing from a customer point of view, but They're starting to use a new NetFlow format, if I read it correctly, and machine learning-derived heuristics to recognize malware in motion. Now, that's my definition of it. Flow records coming off the switches. There's a machine learning engine that has – they've done the analysis offsite. So Cisco's collected data offsite. They've been using machine learning to recognize patterns in TLS encrypted or HTTPS encrypted data. And they're now able to, at a substantial level, 99%+, they claim, and I've got links to the research in the show notes, saying that they can actually recognize malware and viruses and so forth in the LAN at a very high level. So that is very interesting.
When I saw that, I was very curious. I was like, wow, okay, how are you getting malware information out of encrypted traffic? I scanned the research paper that they put out, which has a lot of gory detail. If you're interested, we'll link to it. The high level is that they're looking at unencrypted TLS headers, so they're working with unencrypted data. The payload happens to be encrypted, so they're not looking at the – what they do is look at the parameters that are set up between the client and the server, and apparently there are patterns in the parameters that malware families use that they can say with some definitive idea, this must be malware because of, for instance, you know, the cipher suites that are being used or some extensions that aren't being used that would be used with normal good traffic. So we're fairly confident in saying this is something that you shouldn't look at.
Yeah. And I think from a business point of view, up until now, we've just had to say, well, we can't do anything with the LAN. We can't secure the desktops. We either have to secure at the endpoint or we have to secure at the firewall. So we build a castle. You know, we have a castle, a moat around the castle. But once you're inside the castle, you can
game
do whatever
over.
You like.
Yeah.
You can run around and stab everybody in the back. It's like a computer game with really bad AI. So starting to bring these tools in, and we've seen in a lot of startups in this space building inline appliances to capture data, or people have been putting IDS. So now to actually turn the network switches themselves into telemetry is a way to justify raising the price of those switches, or to justify the high levels of cost of switches, the sort of switches that Cisco wants to sell, right?
Right.
Don't forget that these things are also going to enhance the integration with ISE, so Identity Services Engine. A lot of people are already doing this to control who accesses the network. So when you hit the network with the desktop goes away to an ISE, and then the ISE validates whether that desktop, that user, that app should be on the network at all, and solves another part of the endpoint security problem. So in a sense, the network is really starting to merge. And these new switches are also sold, and here's the kicker, right? You can't buy the software, you can only have a subscription for it, right? So this is a real turnaround, and that's mandatory. You cannot buy it and own it. You are going to have to come up with a plan inside of your budgeting to buy your software every single year. You can't capitalize the software purchase anymore.
That's the new hotness. That's how we all do it now. You don't own anything.
Yeah, it's just to highlight why Cisco would do that and drive such a difference and make it mandatory. So, you know, even if customers don't want it, you're still going to have to if you want to get into this DNA strategy. But Cisco has to deliver recurring revenue to its investors. Investors are looking at Cisco and saying, if you're not doing day-by-day revenue, then you're not a cloud company. And that doesn't sound very clever, but that's how investors work, right? And Cisco's committed to increasing its recurring revenue over the next 5 years. It's given hard goals, and it has to hit them because it's not a growth stock. It's a dividend stock. So on one hand, Cisco needs to switch people over to paying every year for their software for something. Doesn't really matter what, so long as it's something. So then the investor can go, oh, good, well, you're cloud. You're like AWS. And on the other hand, it can't actually switch too far over to recurring revenue because that would actually slow down the total sales. So as you shift to recurring revenue, you lose the capital that you get on day one. So before, when you used to sell a switch, say for a $500,000 switch, well, you get all the revenue on day one, you book it, that's great. But if you change the pricing so that you get $500,000 over 3 years, you know, $125,000 a year or something like that, then all of a sudden you're going to end up with this lump at hole where you've just suddenly gone from $500,000 in year one to $125,000, you know. And eventually,
well, if you think about it like a wave, instead of having these peaks where you're booking some giant revenue and then a trough, you're trying to flatten out that line a little bit and make it a little smoother. But there is a transition period where the market's going to say, hey, what happened to those peaks? Where'd they go? What's happening?
What would happen is eventually your revenue drops on month one, on year one.
Yeah, yeah.
But it picks up 3 or 4 years down the track. But Cisco's now a dividend stock and it can't do that. So if Cisco's revenue drops off at any substantial more level, investors will dump the stock. And then it becomes a route. So you don't want to do that. Okay. So there's multiple different a lot of moving parts in this announcement. And I imagine the salespeople are right now in the indoctrination camps being taught how to position this.
Re-education.
Yes. Well, now that you've... yes.
Two plus two is five.
That's right.
Five.
Yes. We've had the same campus strategy for 20 years. We've got a new one. So now it's time to come in for re-education. So very exciting, very excited. So let's talk a little bit about one question that's in the back of my mind. Is it begs the question, absolutely begs the question, what happens to the existing campus products? We know that there's a Catalyst 3850 using UADP2-1 chipset. There's the 4500, 4700, Catalyst 6800. And there's so many switches in that strategy. One would hope that we see them EOL'd. So if Cisco, you'll know Cisco is serious about SD access if and when those switches get end of life. And if Cisco focuses down, now keep in mind Cisco's got, again, this problem. If it starts end of lifing switches and sales fall off, then it's risky for them and they don't want to do that. But if they want to convince customers that SDN in the campus is the future, and I'm quite certain of that because obviously I believed in SDN for a number of years now, but I think it's just inevitable, then they're going to have to walk away from the existing products and say those products are, they're there, but then there's no more progress on those, or they're end-of-lifing the ones that aren't selling very well and say Catalyst 9000 is the way of the future and start building on top of that because you're going to start being into software-defined access, you know, 5 years after that. What happens to existing campus products is a question I want to see an answer to.
Yeah, that's very interesting because in addition, when you announce end of life, then that's also an opportunity for competitors to come in and say, hey, if you're thinking about swapping out those switches, why not look at, hey, look at this new Aruba Core switch. Hey, look at what's going on with Extreme. Hey, look at what's going on even with Riverbed, which is trying to start, they're starting at the branch and then moving into the campus with their whole wireless strategy. So,
well, so are all the other.
Yeah, all the other folks.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about wireless. We're going to leave that to later on, but let's talk about that now. Because obviously the point here is that access of wired and wireless, those were all one network. So I sort of felt that it was unsaid that wireless will come into this strategy in the near future. And I don't think anymore that wireless needs to be separated from wired. And the reason being is not because, and that works for Cisco. You know, Cisco's wireless team is very isolated away from the campus switching for the last 5 years or so. But what we've seen is Aruba develop its own operating system on some, you know, merchant silicon. And that's separate from the part of HPE that's doing Arista in the data center, right? So you've got, and Ruckus has got its own Ethernet switches. That was part of the reason the Brocade bought it, because they saw that wireless and wired was converging. So I think you're going to see Cisco's wireless start to converge under this banner as well. And the software-defined access is going to start, you know, the wireless controllers and the tool chains, they're going to have to start to unify into this strategy as well over time. Or Cisco will, you know, it's leaving space for someone else to come in. So I think that's going to have to happen.
Yeah, it's very clear that the Identity Service Engine, ICE, is underneath this SD access component. And ICE is where they're trying to integrate wired and wireless in terms of policy and enforcement.
Yeah. So let's talk about DNA Center. DNA Center is a new software platform, if I read it right, where telemetry is taken from there's a thing called a whole telemetry system where it takes the telemetry from the network and does analytics and data and visibility. So what's interesting about this SD analytics is it doesn't cross the customer silos like other products. So typically, when you start doing monitoring systems on the network and trying to unite them with your servers or your virtualization or your, you know, database or your storage engines, there's no platform which can unite them all together. And so when you go and get a tools like, say, a SolarWinds or a Pacelor or those other tools that are out there, quite often they cross the silos. So trying to get agreement between the networking team, the storage team, and the server team, and the virtualization team on a unified platform is usually very difficult. And Cisco's avoided that by just focusing on an analytics platform that hits the networking. So networking can buy it, and that reduces the barrier to adoption. And if you've got other products, like any of these network management products that you might have been running for many years, I would expect them to be displaced by and large by this product, or have to compete very strongly, or develop features that are at the same level as this. Which would be interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm not sure if you could. I suspect Cisco will always have a competitive edge because there's not too many I don't think there's too many standards in here.
Now, did you get any insight onto how Cisco is actually getting this data off? Is it a pull method? Is it streaming telemetry? Is it how are they picking up, or are they just pulling packets off the wire? How is this working? Did you get any insight into that?
It's a kind of streaming telemetry. The only piece was somewhere it said it's an enhanced net flow.
Okay.
So it's not streaming telemetry in the form that we would normally talk about, say, on a Junos using gRPC and Yang models. It seems to be just flow records in net flow. And that is a form of telemetry, but really most people don't regard flow records as telemetry. Telemetry should be much more than that. But anyway, it's enough to feed an ML recognition, an ML-derived model that's downloaded to your local copy.
So you're going to be shipping records off to some kind of collector, which will then boot it up to some kind of analytics engine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's from what I can understand, there's an on-premises software engine somewhere inside your data center, which is going to collect all these flows where the SD Analytics platform, where the DNA Center is installed. And in that software, there'll be a bunch of ML models that have been processed by Cisco up, and they'll download them to you, right? So every day your DNA Center will wake up and go and download a whole bunch of ML models and policy updates and things like that. Over time, it'll build up to something that's reliable and stable. So that's the thing, is no mention of any of this being in the cloud, which I thought was interesting. This seems to be all on-prem.
Mm-hmm.
But with NetFlow, you can't take it all off-prem because it's a lot of data. That's another reason, different reasons. So I don't believe there's anything in the cloud. I could be wrong. There's, like I said, this is a big announcement, and I wasn't able to get – there's only so many hours in a day.
It really was. Well, I called it a DDoS at the start of the show, and it really just felt like Cisco was like, suck on this. Boom.
Just so much to take in, and it's not being done during Cisco Live, which I think just...
I mean, I'm sure they're going to get into it while they're there. Maybe they want to just control the news cycle for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but you know, normally this is dead air. I was wondering if we're going to have anything to talk about this week.
Surprise!
The DNA Center looks really good. It's a software platform tightly integrated between the campus switch hardware and the platform itself. Comes from one vendor, which is often very comfortable for people. The interface looks really modern. So when I had a look at some of the screenshots and stuff that I could see on Cisco's website, hard to tell too much where, you know, like whether the functionality is great or anything like that, but it looks really sexy. And the fact that it's integrated with the LAN starts to suggest that you'll see it integrate the branches as well. So obviously big goals here. If it's going to take over the WAN and the branch LAN and the wireless, then I think you're seeing Cisco make it a really deep strategy.
Yeah, they're coming out fighting for the campus. They are not yielding to competitors in any way.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of things to think about. Execution obviously is a big concern. As I said before, Cisco's execution on products is normally fairly haphazard. Reliability of the first couple of years is something to be questioned based on past history. That's not to say that they would do that again, but certainly I would be very cautious about racing into this. I would probably be thinking, if it was me and I was looking at something like this, I'd be looking at a 2 to 5 years, maybe. Would I hold up buying campus gear? Yes, I would. Would I race into getting this? No, I would not. So I would slow down my campus purchases and start hoarding my dollars maybe for some time, 2 to 5 years down the track when it makes sense. No mention of standards in any of this. It's all Cisco, Cisco, Cisco. So whether it's proprietary or not, but I think standards is losing its impact for many of us anyway. And I also have some questions about what happens to its other network operation software. So Epic EM, Prime, there's dozens of these things inside of Cisco that do network monitoring. And are they all dead? Are they all still being sold? Are they being supported? Again, not enough time to go and research these, or not enough information to say about what these secondary impacts are.
Well, clearly ICE is a key component of this, ISE. I saw them mention or reference APIC EM as a component in one of the documents, so that seems to still be on the table. Prime was not mentioned anywhere. I don't know what's going on with Prime, so yeah, that's a question in my mind too.
So if you've got those products, might be time to start looking around. Cisco, don't call in the salespeople. You regret it. They might think that you want to buy it. And as we know from Cisco ACI, they'll come and beat you to death until you buy it, and that might be bad for everybody. So be cautious about engaging on this technology. Catalyst 9000, really fascinating. I think the heart of this, of course, is the UADP2 silicon. So the UADP silicon is what's been powering the 3850 and I think some of the 4700 switches for a while. All of these Catalyst 9000s have UADP2 silicon in it for a new portfolio. There's a 9300, 9400, and 9500. There's chassis, non-chassis. There's 1 gig, 10 gig. And interestingly, there's a whole push around 40 gig, which is odd. Now, I don't know if I'm missing something, but 40 gig is just an expensive Ethernet technology that everybody's just left behind. And yet Cisco hasn't embraced 25, 50 or 100 gig in any of this campus stuff, which seems unusual to me. And I'm not quite sure, am I missing something? You know, is 40 gig in the campus make sense as a long haul technology because it's got some distance or some power or something? If anybody knows, please let me know. Get in contact. Again, I wouldn't have thought that 40 gig in the campus made sense because it's just so much more expensive, and it seems strange to push out. Like, for example, the 9500 is a 40 gig only switch. That is, it's got 10 gig ports but 40 gig uplinks. And it would make no sense to me to say force customers to buy more expensive because that makes the switches look more expensive than cheaper products. The logic there would be that Cisco, unable to change quickly, therefore they're stuck with the legacy 40 gigs and they haven't bothered to respin and customers are just going to have to pay up if they want the features that come out. Or it could be wrong. If there's something special about 40 gig in the campus, I'd love to hear about it. Never know. As product launches go, Cisco hasn't got much to sell today. So if you're expecting to do an Apple and say, just take my money, that's not, no. These products will all be shipping sort of from Q3, Q4 onwards, and a lot of them won't. I would say, judging from the lack of switches, there's a lot more coming in the future if Cisco can get them out the door. So again, Cisco's done what I call the fat lady thing, make a big announcement in the space, and so no more startups come into this space, so it owns it before it gets out of control. The big fat lady sits down on the bus, and she owns all the seats where she's sitting. Or, you know, as they used to say, it's all over until the fat lady sings.
That's right. Pick your metaphor.
So a couple of minor gripes about the Catalyst 9000, and these are minor because there's not much to evaluate here. Everything in Cisco seems to be a 9000, Firepower 9000, Catalyst 9000, Nexus 9000, MDS 9000, ASR 9000, and that just seems to be a bit odd. I had a bit of a chat about this on Twitter, and some people pointed out to me, well, what you need to do is remember the name in front defines it, and then the 9000 is just a model key. And what they're trying to say is that everybody should be on 9000 everything.
I see. Okay.
Right? So you should not be owning a Firepower 3000 or a Catalyst 3000. The state of the art is 9000 everything. And that means you've got the latest generation of Firepower, Catalyst, Nexus, MDS, ASR. I think that's a little silly because it's much easier in a meeting to just talk. And so the 9K here and the 3K there and the 4K this, and you instantly know that that's a campus switch, a data center switch, a firewall, a blah, blah, blah. And so I'm not a big fan of that naming convention, but then what do I know? I'm just a podcast host, right?
I guess so.
A few people agreed with me, and some people piped up and said, what does it matter? And some people said, it makes perfect sense to me. But funnily enough, the people who it made perfect sense to were the Cisco employees who'd been briefed in advance. So maybe there's some logic there. And then, of course, as I said earlier, I think it's really important that Cisco EOLs a wide range of products to prove that they are serious. If they continue to sell the legacy products, you know, the 3800, the 4700, 6800, then customers just aren't going to move forward, and they're going to get stuck holding onto these legacy products, and there's going to be a whole bunch of problems that hang up around that. So, yeah, interesting times, right?
Super interesting times, yeah.
Security, switches, everything, just fantastic.
Security, switches, automation, intent, intuition, SDN in the campus. There's a lot happening, and I think this is going to give us a lot to unpack over the spring, the summer and fall, so that's nice for us.
Yeah. So let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up with some key points. So I've got this. Unfortunately, there's a lot of them. So I've got 5 good and 5 bad takeaways for you.
Okay.
First of all, we still joke that Cisco thinks SDN stands for still does nothing because quite a bit of the company still doesn't know on SDN. Okay. It looks like it took Cisco a while to get here. As you might expect, they are a big company. They're 1,000 rowboats, not an oil tanker. But looks like in a few years they'll have an SDN strategy across most of their portfolio. That is the data center, the campus, the WAN, and the branch. And potentially maybe they'll even get their storage units and their other technologies into an SDN, a coherent SDN strategy. I think the second thing that you need to know about is that it validates intent-based automation. So we've seen very wide range of approaches to automation, the piecemeal scripting, the scripting frameworks, the platforms on the top that do like what I call Goldbergian machine automation, you know, pull this lever and then click, 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 and all these things happen. But it's not really intelligent automation. So what Cisco's throwing down about is saying intelligent, policy-driven, intent automation is indeed the future. So if you want to go out and start looking around at other intent-based companies, you should do that. And that would be worth doing to get some comparison.
Yeah, I think it's key that Cisco led this talking about intent that was coming across in their marketing message, even ahead of software defined, which gets tacked onto everything now. So it seems like that was a definite intentional marketing move to sort of stamp this whole initiative with that intent label.
Yeah, I don't think intuitive networking is actually going to catch on.
Well, they've always got to put something that's theirs then not the market's. So
I mean, you do see signs. This is a very big initiative, and you do see some signs of some shambolic sort of marketing. Some of them use the word intuitive networking and some of them use the word intent. And you can't help but wonder if during the development cycle, you know, there was this camp of marketing that said it was going to be intuitive and this one said, and it's got to be intent. And so maybe that will unify itself out as time goes by. You know, big companies are hard to keep in pulling in one direction. I do think that Cisco remains strong in the WAN and campus. So this makes perfect sense to go all in on this. They haven't been able to hold on to the data center network. A lot of it's just gone away from them. Arista's obviously been doing fairly well. A lot of white box in the cloud. They've lost control of the public cloud. So Cisco should be able to maintain control of the WAN in the campus. And this is a very good way of doing it, right? You can't cloud this because the WANs and the campuses are actually inside people's physical infrastructures. You can't cloud a switch that's sitting in your physical buildings, you know, in head office. So launching a big initiative that where the cloud can't come seems to me to be a very obvious move. It's not an innovation. This is, I don't think there's anything about this announcement which is not perfectly plain to see and not something that we haven't been talking about for years now, that Cisco needs to come out with something that unifies all of their products together. And I hope this. So this certainly defends their revenue against the white box in the campus. We've seen Arista starting to do more targeting itself. We know Cumulus is doing stuff to head into the campus. If you believe Cisco is a great business partner, then this whole thing is great news for your business strategy. If you want to stick with Cisco, you like Cisco, you think they're doing the right things for you, now you've got a vision that you can certainly hang your long-term strategy around. Make sense?
It does, although I want to push back a little bit about that notion that you can't cloud this. I sort of take your meaning, but you can kind of half cloud it, and folks like Meraki have done just that, in that, yes, you've got a physical product that's still on your network, but you put the management layer and the operational layer up in the cloud, and that's worked for Meraki and others very well. So it is interesting to note that Cisco didn't talk about having any of this as a cloud-based management layer. So obviously their intent is to keep everything on-premises as much as possible. Maybe they'll cloudify it a little bit later down the line. But yeah, I just wanted to call that out, that it can be cloudified and some people are. Cisco's choosing not to, but it can be.
Yeah, I think by and large, that's a step too far for the majority of the market. So Meraki works for a certain group of people, but they're still other, you know, like it's a stripped down niche product in that sense. So I take your point. It's possible that Cisco could actually move the controller functions into the cloud in the same way that the SD-WAN companies still putting appliance on-prem, but all the administration's done off-prem.
Sure.
I think most enterprises have a problem with that. And so why make it that hard to sell?
Yeah. You don't want to throw that, have that objection be sitting there when you're trying to move this kind of massive product strategy forward. I get that.
That's right. So fifth and last good point about this strategy, very difficult for startups to compete with a strategy that's just this big. It's just so broad.
Right. Yes, it is.
Yeah. So when you earn $10 billion a year or, you know, $5 billion a year from the campus, guess how big your strategy can be? It's $1 billion strategy. $1 billion. So this is a play that only a dominant supplier can make. They're going to integrate everything. They're going to cover all the angles. And customers who love this eggs in one basket is great idea, then they're going to love this. I think that's going to be great. Let me give you my five negative points, perhaps in the wrap up, if I can. There's nothing new here. There's nothing new that hasn't been done by other companies. Look at Kentik, ThousandEyes, Nokia Deepfield, Glue Networks, Apstra, Anuda, all those companies have been sponsors of the packet pushers, so disclosure. But you should go and listen to their shows and then listen to what they're doing and then listen to what Cisco's doing, and you'll see strong similarities and aspects of the technology all reflected there. So I don't think this is an innovation. I think this is Cisco catching up to where the market has already gone. But they're coming out it's, as I said, still 2 years away, and Cisco always comes from behind. They come to the market late, which is fine. The big companies do that. That's the way things are. It's not a criticism. That's just reality. You can't have it today. So that's the second thing. You can't have it today. As usual, Cisco has announced products it doesn't have ready. And third thing bad is, of course, I would never buy the first version of a Cisco product, because based on long-term history, the first versions will just cause you problems. And that's why Cisco is selling them as limited availability, because they expect them to be faulty. And so should you. As they say in the announcement, all of this stuff will be under restricted sales for the foreseeable future. And the reason that Cisco does it is it doesn't want to see these things deployed to sites and then fail without being able to control the message or work with the customer to resolve those problems. Fourth, what happens to Tetration? What happens to a whole range of other products? But Tetration, you don't want to have different telemetry solutions for different part of the network. I understand that the networks in the data center are different from the solutions in the campus, but you don't want to have this proliferation of management and monitoring platforms. I'm not sure that this makes sense. And so the fourth part is, if you bring out a new strategy like this but don't announce that anything is dead, then I'm starting to question your commitment. So something has to die here. Tetration should die and this should take over, or vice versa. It doesn't really matter so long as one of them is the key. And I understand there are differences between the two, but I think you could end up with a unified strategy around this. And finally, the fifth point is, serious, serious challenges here for Cisco resellers. If you are a box shifter, if you are used to saying, here's a box, sell it from here to here and take the cash and run off to the bank with a Donald, you know, like a Scrooge McDuck and go, money, money. You're going to be in serious trouble here. This solution isn't going to be something that you can just go, here's a pack, here's a software license, here's a software license, here's a hardware switch, here's a bunch of SFPs. Bye. You're really going to have to be professional services. And in fact, a significant part of the marketing collateral focuses on the Cisco, on the services, and then the fact that Cisco is going to deliver them. So Cisco's already producing professional services packages and workflows and scopes of works. It's on their website. If you're a reseller who doesn't employ engineers, you basically, the only thing you employ is pre-sales engineers, I suspect you're going to find a pretty chilly reception with Cisco in the near future. There's going to have to be some change in the partner status and stuff like that. There you go.
All right. It gets pretty good. 5 and 5.
5 and 5.
So much to digest.
So yeah, it's just, it's so much of it too. Like, this is just, and there's so much marketing, and the marketing and the brochures, quite often they do conflict. That's quite normal for Cisco. A lot of this stuff is written months ahead, and then it gets put together, and then when it's, anyway, they'll unify it eventually. That's pretty normal for a big company to sort of get a bit messed up. But everything is sort of there, and I'm trying to take a big picture view. Everything here is the strategy that makes sense for Cisco. In fact, they should have done it 5 years ago. I think they're way too late with this in that sense. But, you know, at the end of the day, networking doesn't change. It's very boring. People happy with what they've got, you know, that sort of stuff. And maybe they're picking now is the right time to bring it out when customers are actually starting to move. And we live in this little tiny bubble that's where we're constantly looking to the future and we get tired of not seeing anything change. So, yeah, overall, really excited about the whole thing. I think this just validates SDN everywhere at last. Everybody's going to have to get used to the fact that software is everywhere. And you probably won't need to be a programmer because this will probably do it for you.
Right. I actually think Cisco's timing is pretty good on this. I know because we see so much technology and try to look at the future, we can be a little jaded, but I think their timing is right because there's a lot of concepts and ideas in here that have taken time over the past 3 or 4 years to kind of bubble up and get people comfortable with them. And if they had tried to do this sooner, I don't know. I think the business case, the demand for flexible, more visible, more automated infrastructure is here. It's real. And now they can capitalize on it. I think their timing isn't bad. But to echo your point, Cisco needs to do this. They've got to protect the campus. It's where they can do ownership. And yes, I agree that by dropping this big announcement, they're essentially saying to startups, forget it. We're locking you out. This is ours. And here it is.
Yeah, exactly. There won't be so much venture capital money running into the enterprise IT space. But it's also great for companies who have intent-based automation systems because they've just had their strategy validated.
Sure did, in a big way. All right, so we do actually have some other Cisco news, and we'll get to that very quickly. But first, just a brief message from our sponsor for today, ExtraHop. ExtraHop is the leader in real-time IT analytics, and they pioneer wired data. That is the window into digital transactions that gives you insight across the IT environment, from your data center to the edge to the cloud, to help IT leaders make data-driven decisions that enable them to optimize performance, security, and customer experience. For a long time, IT has thought of the network as either plumbing or a problem. But with ExtraHop, the network becomes the biggest source of real-time visibility for IT. That's because ExtraHop does the analysis first and then stores packets. This creates wired data, which encompasses all the interactions between IT systems and the organizations that rely on them. Wired data is rich, real-time, observed, and objective. Analyzing it at scale transforms the network from a transport function to the foundation of all digital experience. To learn more about ExtraHop and try it for yourself, you can visit them at extrahop.com/demo. Connect with them on Twitter at ExtraHop. And if you mention Packet Pushers, you can get a free t-shirt. ExtraHop, it's instant insight for IT. Okay, we've got some other news just to go over quickly because the show is getting very long. But Arista, they announced new additions to their Universal Spine Leaf line of switches and routers. They're targeting cloud companies and service providers. One of the new announcements is the 7516R. It's a monster box, 576 100 gig ports, and a total combined throughput of over 150 terabits per second.
Yeah, it just goes to show you that hardware isn't dead.
Guess not.
Yeah, so this is, all of this is based on the Jericho Plus chipset. Nobody wants to talk about silicon. I think it's absolutely, that's like talking about cars without saying what sort of engine it's got inside.
Right.
So guess what? I'm always going to talk about these things. I think there's lots of interesting things about this. It's really bigger, better, faster, more modern. But Arista here is also pushing very strongly its software features like FlexRoute and AlgoMatch as well. So those functions are key to being able to differentiate their product over time. So now that they've got the chassis, got the stability, getting market share, this starts to move the product out of being just an Ethernet switch and also into the routing space. So they're starting to position the product as a high-speed 100 gig internet router.
That's right.
Instead of buying a big switching platform, routing platform from the big, they're saying, why don't you put an Arista in instead? And I think that's going to be a long, slow fight.
Probably. And speaking of FlexRoute, they announced new line cards using FlexRoute that are capable of handling 2 million routing prefixes. Last time around when they came out, it was 1 million. So they've doubled that capability in this new set of line cards.
I don't usually read the quotes in these press releases, but the one here comes from the CEO of NetNod. He's one of these IXPs slash carriers, and they're using it to run their internet backbone, which is quite interesting. So what you're seeing here is the maturing of the platform to be more of a router and less of a switch. And that opens up the service provider market and the IXP market to Arista, which is not something they've historically focused on, I think, would be it's there and people have been buying their products. But now they're starting to add features that are better suited to those exact customers.
That's right. Although they did also roll out some new leaf switches as well in the 7280 R2 line. And those have 10 to 100 gig ports. You can mix and match 10, 25, et cetera. So, yeah, new products from Arista.
Oh, yes. And MACsec is the other thing.
And MACsec, yes. With the new line cards, you can support MACsec. Yeah.
That's right, which is really important if you're doing DCI. So Arista already has a bunch of line cards that do DCI up to 50 kilometers, 5,000 kilometers. Can't remember the exact number. But if you're doing data center interconnect, you may not have to go and buy a separate box or a separate function to do the data center interconnect over dark fiber. Arista has stuff that can go straight into those chassis for very long haul, you know, DWDM-like applications. And now they're able to do MACsec, so you can actually do L2 encryption transparently. And you need MACsec in the silicon to be able to do that. And that's what Jericho Plus gives them, I suspect.
And also a quick update in the long-running Cisco Arista patent infringement case. A judge at the International Trade Commission, they ruled that Arista's workarounds do not violate Cisco's SysDB patents. That's good news for Arista. This means they can continue to import their products into the U.S. There's supposed to be a final determination on this specific matter. There's other matters still out there pending. But on this matter, maybe we should finally get some ruling to close it once for all in September 2017.
Some patents were invalidated, some patents were upheld. Some patents were upheld but deemed to have no commercial value. There's still, out of the original seven patents, there's still a couple to go. Some of them are in the ITC, the Trade Commission, where Cisco went to make sure that nobody could import Arista. That seems to have failed. So now Arista can continue to, has made enough changes to the where it matters or they're not in breach. So they can continue to import components without being blocked into the US. It was only the US. And the second part, the rest of it now goes back to the patent court. Some of the patents were invalidated on challenge, but the rest is just going to go on. We've still got another couple of years to go in this. So, but everybody, the share price rose another 1.8% on the back of this. So, yay.
Arista share price?
Yeah, yeah. So the people who spend a lot of time worrying about this more than me, they thought it was pretty positive.
The money folks were happy for Arista, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Juniper Networks, they made a couple of announcements last week talking about node slicing and the universal chassis. Node slicing means you can run multiple instances of the Junos operating system on the same physical hardware. So just like with a hypervisor on a server, lets you run VMs. Node slicing does the same thing on their MX router platform. The goal is to let operators run different kinds of services on the same router. For example, you can have one node running your business services, one node running residential services. And just like a virtualized server, you can allocate your hardware resources on the MX router among the slices dynamically.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is not something I had a chance to catch up on. I was head down. So tell me, why is this, you know, to me, this sounds like an NFV play.
I asked them about that. I thought, is this NFV or white box? And they said, no, that's not what we're going after. What they really wanted to do was help their customers to essentially like server virtualization, where you've got this souped up hardware platform that you're not really maxing out to its full capability. Instead of buying another MX, we'll let you split up the operating system and run multiple functions and features on this hardware platform. So it's almost more like hardware virtualization than it is an NFV play, because the idea is to take this hardware platform and let you do different things with it using the same operating systems, but just sliced up into virtual machines.
Well, I guess what they're trying to say is one physical box, but you can make it look like multiple
logical boxes.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that each customer sees their own routing instance and they can do their own thing, or each business unit, or
it's each business unit. Yeah. I think it's not about segmenting customers, it's about segmenting business operations. So, you know, I'm going to use this one router, and on one side, I'm going to do, you know, some IP stuff. And on the other side of the router, I'm going to do some 4G. So, yeah, so you're essentially just taking the hardware and splitting up virtually.
Okay, that makes sense. But let's just say that my experiences of this back in the, you know, when I was doing this in for real life, it never worked quite as well as you thought it would. So color me dubious and no doubt. But if Juniper says generally when Juniper follows through and executes on a software strategy, it usually works pretty well. So there's no reason to think that this is not, doesn't have meaning or purpose. It's just not immediately obvious to me.
That's right. Well, if you're interested, it's right now available on the MX router and they're thinking about porting it to other platforms. The other thing they announced was a universal chassis. So rather than having separate chassis designs for your core and your edge and your campus, they're building one chassis platform, and then you drop in the line cards and the software to make it a switch, to make it a router. And I guess you get that sort of operational benefit of having one essential basic platform and then putting the components you need to make it do what you want wherever.
Works for me.
Okay.
It's one of those things where service providers do things that are, this is something we were doing in enterprises like 10, 15 years ago, and it worked really well, and then it didn't. It was really useful for a while, and then suddenly we found out all these limitations and hard problems, and we sort of abandoned it, and we don't do it anymore.
I guess they're bringing it back.
Yeah, well, you know, no old technology dies. It just comes back again sometime in the future.
That's right. All right, and our last story for the show, I saw this just as we were about to record. Dell EMC is announcing that it's no longer going to sell VBlocks, that's the converged infrastructure product, with Cisco's Nexus 1000V virtual switch. Going forward, it's just going to be VXBlocks that use VMware's distributed switch.
Yeah, so this is basically the VBlocks used to force the use of Cisco's Nexus 1000V virtual switch. And with the recent announcement from VMware that they're end-of-lifing any third-party vSwitches, not just Cisco's, but also IBM and HPE's version of the same thing, you can't sell it. So big deal. I think what might be news here is that Dell EMC has actually executed them pretty quickly. So they're announcing early that the Nexus 1000V won't be sold. I think they should have just said VMware is not supporting it anymore. So it's time for you to stop buying them
right. And
start the move. But as the Register article makes clear underneath the headline, so a little bit of a hype headline, which is always good for the Register. Register's great in a sure. When you read it. What they're saying is the VX blocks, basically, they're a version of that which have an SDN as standard. So you must now buy either the VMware NSX version of the V block or a Cisco ACI driven version of the V block. So they're still into converged infrastructure. They're still into networking. Customers just have to choose whether they want ACI or NSX in their V blocks. And that's called a V block. No big deal. About time people moved away from a proprietary third-party vSwitch on side of VMware when the VDS that VMware has does all the things that you need.
That's right. So going forward, there aren't going to be any more vBlocks. They're all going to be called VXBlocks. It doesn't mean there's no more Cisco gear inside these either. They'll still have UCS servers. They'll still have Nexus 5K, 6K, and 9K hardware. It's just the 1000V that's getting the boot.
Dell and EMC are both mercenary enough to say, we'll sell whatever the customer wants. We've got one of everything, and preferably we'll have three of everything the customer wants because in case they want chocolate, vanilla, or strawberry. And
sure, or Neapolitan. So, put them all together.
Put them all together if you like, and you know we're stupid enough to sell it to you. So there you go. If you're stupid enough to buy it, we're stupid enough to sell it. So okay. That's not unexpected.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this marathon network break. Greg, where can folks get more from you if they haven't had enough already?
You can probably find me in Las Vegas at Cisco Live next week. Don't forget we have the Astro Live party. If you're around Cisco Live, we will be hanging around the social media area like a bad smell. You can come over and wave us away and chat to us and we can talk and see if we can catch up. I'd love to see you. Ethan will be there as well, of course. And so we'll be doing some recordings and I'll be trying out my YouTube skills, such as they are. If not, you can see me blogging at etheriomind.com, making snarky comments on the Twitter as @etheriomind. And I'm also boosting up my LinkedIn because apparently you morons all hang around there too.
All right. I'm Drew Conroy Murray. I'm on Twitter at @drew_cm. I blog at packetpusher.net and I'm also putting more stuff on LinkedIn because I want to be a moron too. Thanks to our sponsor, ExtraHop, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you enjoy the show, give us a like on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share it with your friends. And please check out our newsletters. That's Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. You can sign up for those for free at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.